I have my special guest on, which I snagged at the last minute. David Abbas is with me via phone to talk a little bit about agrophrenology this morning. Thank you, Dave, for being with us.
Great to be here.
Yeah, and just so listeners know, Dave is doing this despite not feeling the best, but I think hopefully your voice will hold out for us. And I contacted you because I was thinking about the fact that we've actually talked on the radio before about your work with the University of Minnesota Duluth over many years, and particularly in the last 5 years, working to create a new system by which farmers and other planters, gardeners, will be able to know when to start planting and when to do what. And with climate change's new sort of level of unpredictability and volatility, it seems like this might be a better way to predict what's happening rather than just by a calendar year. Is that an accurate depiction of what you've been working on?
Yeah, I think I started research through the Minnesota Department of Agriculture to formalize kind of our data collection.
Okay.
And basically, so what is agrophrenology? It's using phenological indicators, which is the change of things over time, with agriculture. And so, you know, we've had the great luxury of working with Wolf Ridge, with Peter Harris, who's the phenology champion. And so I had 30 years of data about when things emerged. When did the dandelion flower? When did the white-throated sparrow first sing each day, each year? And so we have records. And then I correlated that with specific crop testing, planting things 2-week intervals, and then seeing how well they did relative to the phenological indicators. And if, you know, the idea is maybe we could use the phenological indicators, the chorus frog singing, as a better way to determine when to plant than looking at our standard calendar. And this year is an obvious example of that. It's obvious for a lot of people when things are late, because they're like, hey, wait, isn't it supposed to be,
right. You
know, warmer now? It's harder when it's earlier, and that's what's been happening as well. Overall, we're about a 2-week longer growing season, but the problem is the inconsistency. You don't know, is this the year it's early in the spring, late in the fall?
Right.
Is it, you know, early and early? You know, a couple years ago, we had a frost up here in Finland, August 28th. And so you never know, even though generally the season is longer, you don't know exactly what does this season look like. But I know you all probably don't have much snow down in Two Harbors.
Right. But you still do, I think. Huh?
Oh, we have a foot and a half.
Oh, my goodness.
So we, you know, some of the indicators we look for to determine our next steps, like rhubarb first leaves. Guess what? We can't see the rhubarb.
Yeah.
And if the dandelions are flowering, I don't know, because we can't see anything.
Right.
And so I was actually looking back at some records, and 2019, we're much closer to 2019 in our season right now with indicators than last year.
Huh.
And, you know, so it's really interesting to see, by having records, you can see. So, you know, one of the indicators we look for is rhubarb, but we also look for the aspens, first catkins, or the white-throated sparrow. And, you know, in 2019, the dandelions didn't flower on our farm till the 26th of May. And the chorus frog was the 5th of May in 2019. But last year, the chorus frog was May 1st.
Huh.
So the key is these indicators can really do, the ones to use for making an agriculture planting calendar are the ones that are variable and variable in correlation with the overall weather.
Yes.
And some of our best indicators are rooted trees, shrubs, because they not only get the weather around them, they get the condition below them.
Oh, yes.
With the moisture and the ground and all of these other things. So over the years, through research, we identified the benefits and consequences of planting at different times.
Yes.
And then watching the production of those.
And then it seemed like it would take many, many years to figure this out, because you have to try, or do you try planting at different times? Like you try planting when you first see the right-throated sparrow, and then you try another set 2 weeks later, or is that how you do it?
Right. Well, yes, and the easier way to jumpstart is to take existing data. Like we have our production data from a weekly newsletters we would do with our crops.
Yeah.
And we have when we planted everything on a calendar. And then we cross-reference that with phenological indicators throughout the years. So I could take the data from the agriculture and the data from the phenology numbers when things emerged or flowered or came up. And I could say, oh, this year, this production of beans were really, really good. I planted it then. And that was 3 days after Red Osier Dogwood leafed.
Yes.
Yeah, and so you can, as long as you have data, you can kind of map it out and make guesses.
Right.
Based on historical records. And then you can prove it out. But what the research allowed me to do was to do those tests you talked about.
Yes.
And, you know, farmers are always experimenting anyway, so they're like, let's try it. Let's try doing it, you know, right after the red osier dogwood leafs out or flowers. And oh, this year is early. Let's try it anyway. How did it do?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But I had the fortune of being part of the research, so I could do the beans 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks after an indicator. And see how it did. And what's interesting is I had as many crops that we decided to plant later, even though our season's getting earlier, because what we're finding is most of our season extension is in the fall.
Yeah, huh.
And then there's other things, like when we always have struggle with carrots out in the field or beans out in the field with cutworms.
Yes.
So what is the phenological timing of the cutworm? And so we're able to use the cutworm as a phenological indicator.
Oh.
And if we're right with it related to other things, if the cutworms are so big at this time, what does that mean? And so now we plant around those pests because they correlate with other phenological indicators.
Hmm. And it doesn't... go ahead.
It's just not as simple as everything being planted earlier. It's finding the cycles and using them to determine the best planting date.
And it doesn't become hopelessly mired in complexity by, like, one season being a drought and one season being wetter...
Right, and usually in the spring it's less important because there's usually moisture in the spring regardless.
Okay.
And then we have irrigation, but the phenological indicators will adjust and adapt and change when they, many will. Some won't at all. Some are based on the calendar, on the stars, and they are unworthy of using as predictors, and they are kind of the casualties of climate change.
Hmm.
Others are more adaptive. And so, you know, we have birds up here now trying to find water in our frozen lakes because it's supposed to be, clear or getting clear by now.
Right.
And they're the ones that come every year or similar times, and then they get caught with climate change.
Yeah.
And they aren't the best ones we should follow to determine when to plant our crops.
Right, because they're just going to do what they're going to do, and
exactly.
Sad for them if it doesn't work. Hopefully.
And we see that struggle in nature.
Yeah. Yep. Which we are ourselves struggling also as humans.
Absolutely. Yep.
David, do you think this sort of method of really being sort of more in tune with what's happening outside, is this sort of a return to the way agriculture people have forever done their planting, like before there were calendars at all? Or do you see this as something sort of actually a whole new wave that's more like the third wave of how we do things?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a combination. It's in the old way in that people had less data and they spent a lot of time observing things. Farmers would walk their fields every morning. The farms were smaller, so they actually knew the
yeah.
area. The farms had more wild areas and wild patches of plants. So things were telling them things. But imagine this in southwestern Minnesota where there's no trees.
Yeah.
And it's just cropland. This is going to be hard to do down there.
Yeah.
Because there isn't the nature to teach them. But overall, observation is a great thing for farmers. Is the more you stay in tune to observe. What this does, too, is this adds data and research and kind of that level of understanding that could be that next wave where it's part observation, part feel, part gut, and part reality based on data.
Yes.
And recorded observations. Because before we started recording, I had general feelings. But they weren't as accurate as now.
Ah.
And so just fine-tuning the skill, the science, makes those observations even more meaningful.
You know, it's so interesting because I feel like as sailors, we have almost the exact process on. And it's like, because we also have concluded that the season is extended, but it's definitely not extended in a way that we can always predict, and it does seem to be more into the fall than it is up into the spring. And I almost wondered sometimes if there was just a delay of the seasons. And I also find that we have our gut, too, and it is sometimes on, but it's not totally accurate. So it's totally a parallel process going on the water and on the land. So interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense. And when you people who follow the weather, they see the wind directions and the pressure changing, and they can predict, what's likely to happen. But this is the more of an annual prediction and an annual guide.
Yeah.
And that's what agrophenology is about.
Yeah. And David, is there some way that if a listener really wants to learn more or sort of try to do their own observations, is there a website or anywhere you can direct people to, or is this still all just in the works?
Well, this is kind of new at this level. I would reach out to iNaturalists. That's an online gig that you can follow people say, oh, such and such is flowering.
Okay.
And there's usually a local expert in your community that has done phenology.
Okay.
So you could grab that data and use it for your garden. But really localize, because my research compared the Wolf Ridge Farm and the Round River Farm, and they were 10 days apart typically.
Wow.
And even like dandelion flowering happens 5 days earlier on my upper field than the land right next to the garden. And that goes to dryness, and that it dries off quicker and then it heats up quicker. And so water and all these other micro aspects to the land affect timing. And so you want your indicators as close to where you're actually growing, and you want them as and to be specific. So we have lilacs that we use, but the lilacs bloom because of different varieties at different times. And so we use the lilac by the solar panels every year to tell us when to plant the tomatoes in the greenhouse. But if we use the wrong lilac, we would be off by 3 weeks. And so identify where you walk, what you do, what are your indicators that you have contact with, and then you can use those.
Yeah.
And look for the outliers. And that's what I was able to do with the research, too, is find which indicators did not match the majority of them. And those outliers, like the oven bird, are not going to be your best indicators.
Yeah.
Or the crow, or things like that. And so if in doubt, stick with something that's rooted.
Yeah.
Because they are experiencing what your crops will be experiencing.
Wow, well, we are totally out of time. Thank you so much, David. This has been a pleasure and a real learning experience. I think this interview will be rebroadcast tomorrow between 9 and 11 a.m. So thanks so much for talking with us this morning.
All right. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was David Abbas. He is a Regional Sustainable Development Partnership leader at University of Minnesota, also a longtime farmer and leader in the Finland area.